Leaning Toward Wisdom, the podcast. Welcome inside the Ellis Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell. I'm your host here. Today's Monday, January the 18th, 2021. It's season 2021, episode 3. The loudest horn blowers never are the best players. The website is leaningtowardwisdom.com. I contacted about half a dozen business owners. These were cold messages, meaning they didn't know me, I didn't know them. No, I wasn't trying to sell them anything. I was actually potentially interested in buying something from them. Business owners, I was expressing an interest in hiring them for a future project. And yes, they were all in the same space, meaning I guess you could say they were competitors of one another. I was hoping to figure out the best one to do what I wanted to be done. And admittedly, this wasn't something that I wanted done tomorrow. This was something that I upfront told each of them, I'm looking to do this. But I'm not sure, and I'm not sure when. And I know that as a business owner, you hate long sales cycles, and, you know, it is what it is. So I explained in some detail, although not too much in depth, because I wanted to keep the email short, told them what I was hoping to accomplish. Contacted about seven companies. So literally, I'm contacting seven business owners. This is important for the conversation. Business owners. Right away, I heard back from the one who offered to schedule a phone call within the next 2 weeks. He admittedly seemed like, of the seven, there were one or two that seemed like they were probably bigger operations than the rest. This guy was one of the two bigger ones. At least that was my perception. So he offers to have this phone call sometime in the next few weeks, and then there's a little bit of back and forth as far as emails go, and it results in him wanting, frankly, agreeing to a 9 a.m. appointment on some prescribed day, and I offered to send the calendar invitation, which would include a note that he was to call me on my cell phone, which I listed in the invitation. He accepted the invitation, and okay, now we wait. The morning arrived. My wife, she joined me here inside the Ellis studio as we waited this business owner to call. I was going to run the call through my podcasting gear, not to record it, but so that my wife and I, we would both have mics in front of us and headphones, and we could have this conference call on a single phone. So 9 o'clock arrives, then 9:05. Then 9:10, then 9:15. And I told my wife, he's not going to call. At 9:22, I called. No answer. Voicemail. And I left him a voicemail saying, I apologize if I got our time slot wrong, but you offered and accepted the calendar invitation for 9 a.m. this morning. And maybe I misunderstood, and I guess we can reschedule. Thank you. At 9:33, he called. I was in another meeting, so my phone was off. It went straight to voicemail. He left a message that he was calling, and he just acted like he's showing up on time. When I get out of my meeting, I turn my phone on and hear his message, and I return the call. Rang and rang. Then it goes to voicemail. And I left another message very similar to the first one. Never heard from him again. It's been some months ago now. Let me get one thing out here up front. Business requires marketing. Well, I'll even go you one better. Business requires not only marketing, business requires selling. But it absolutely requires, first things first, marketing, getting the word out, elevating visibility as much as possible, being top of mind and all that. Nobody will have a successful business without customers. And to attract customers, you need not only a good or viable product or service, but you need to make sure folks know about your good or viable product or service. I mean, that's just the start. You also have to have your act together. Case in point, you know, and I'm contacting businesses. I'm contacting business owners. These are not, I don't know the degree of their success, but they at least have their act together because they've got a going business of some degree. Whenever I'm dealing with business owners or leaders over at the day job, growgreat.com will get you there. I am focused on the trifecta of business building. A, getting new customers. B, serving existing customers better. And C, not going crazy in the process. So I would love to tell you about the differences between a business and you, but then I realized that may be the foundation of the issue that I'm talking about today. Seems to me many years ago, Tom Peters, he did a series of little smaller books. You know, Peters has been noted for these, you know, pretty voluminous tomes, but these were some smaller books, and it seems to me one was The Business of You. And maybe there is no difference. I mean, maybe we are all in business. Now, we may not be selling products or services or art or podcasts or music for money, but we are certainly vying for attention. And attention may be more difficult to get than money, quite frankly. And as a business guy, I can tell you this much. I know this much to be true. Until you get their attention, you will not get their money. So maybe there is no difference between your personal life and a business. You know, for this is going to sound awful, but I'm going to say it anyway. I mean, for some reason, that notion depresses me. And I'm a business guy. I'm a business kind of guy. But to think that there's no difference between your personal life and a business, and tap the brakes here. Let me define personal life. I don't mean all the personal details of your business, but if you're trying to get people to notice your blog, if you're trying to get people to notice your podcast, if you're trying to get, you know, if you're trying to get, well, podcasters are obsessed with number of listeners. And I regularly disappoint my podcasting cohorts who ask me, you know, like, what kind of listeners you got? I'm like, well, they're, you know, they're this and they're that. No. I mean, how many? And I'm like, I don't have a clue. And I don't. Maybe I should care. You know what? I've never cared. Why don't the best blow their own horn the loudest? That was the original working title for today's show. Why don't the best blow their own horn the loudest? And it was sparked from that incident that I described at the outset of the show. I'm reaching out to these businesses, and I'm asking around, and as you might imagine, some of the more popular, the two that seem to be, you know, kind of at the top of the heap, probably neither one of them are the best. They might be the biggest, but not the best. You know, you start talking to some folks who've experienced working with some of these folks, and you find, okay, well, this, yeah, that company's work, it's less than stellar, but they got big marketing budget. The more I thought about that original title, why don't the best blow their own horn the loudest? The more I thought about it, the less I liked it. And so I changed it to what it is now. The loudest horn blowers never are the best players. Mm-hmm. The real point today is probably best summed up in a statement. If it's worth doing, it's worth doing well. But I don't know. You can decide if that's the point or not, because frankly, I'm not even sure anymore. And I've spent at least the last week kind of thinking about this stuff and ruminating on this stuff. Let's take it a step further. If it's worth doing well, then it's worth doing it as well as you possibly can. It's worth being great. It's worth being remarkable. It's worth being dazzling. And if you've got the talent, and you may not, but you might, if you've got the talent, could be worth being world class. Could be worth doing it that well. So why don't those who are considered world class toot their own horn the loudest? And maybe they do. Maybe I'm just wrong. I mean, there are exceptions. Well, Muhammad Ali, he was an exception. Man, he was a world-class horn tutor and boxer. Michael Jordan, maybe. Tiger Woods in his prime, maybe. Can you think of a non-sports example? Somebody who was world-class at performance or achievement or accomplishment, and they did toot their horn the loudest? Yeah, I can't think of any. They're bound to be some, though, right? I mean, there's always outliers. And then I got to thinking, and I'm able to do that every now and again on good days. Think that is. I got to thinking, well, you know, maybe their being so world-class doesn't require them to shout at the top of their lungs how terrific they are. And maybe their performance, maybe their accomplishment, maybe their achievements speak loudly enough so they don't have to. And that thought quickly gave way to wondering if the folks who are doing it really well, meaning their work is really, really, really top-notch, it got me to thinking and wondering, are they so focused on improving and getting better and doing really, really good work that they just don't have time, or they don't take the time to brag about themselves so that other people will know? Or maybe they've got an operation behind them. Maybe they've got, well, lately I say lately, I don't know about that. When did this Tom Petty, the Wildflowers, you know, the big expanded version of Wildflowers come out? I don't know. I lose track of time, especially with a pandemic and all that. But I hopped down that rabbit hole about where have these songs been? You know, there was that original Wildflowers album. It was a solo album by Tom Petty. Now, many of the Heartbreakers played on it, but it was a solo record for Tom Petty, and it's been this kind of magical thing all its own. And after his death, the family, he was always intending to do this, and Rick Rubin, who was the producer of Wildflowers, was on this project too, and there's a terrific podcast. If you're a podcast listener, there's a terrific podcast. Hang on. I'm going to have to tell you what it is. I think it's called Broken Record. It is. It's called Broken Record. It's Broken Record Podcast. And Rick Rubin is on it. Malcolm Gladwell. It's a good, really good stuff. Well, I got to hopping down the bunny trail of the Wildflowers. This, it's not a new release. It's unreleased stuff. And I, of course, pre-bought the thing off of iTunes when it came out. Well, actually, before it came out, and love it. And I'm a huge Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers fan. But I got to hopping down the bunny trail of listening to his daughter and Benmont Tinch and a number of interviews about Tom Petty and about the Heartbreakers, and specifically about that, the release of that record. And so here you've got Tom, who's super devoted to his craft by all accounts, really fanatical, right, about the quality. But he kind of sort of does have this machine behind him. And I'm not saying that he wasn't a good marketer, and I'm not saying that he wasn't a good salesman, because I think he rather was. But the craft, the art, was what he was into. But he's producing this record, and, you know, there are other people who, you know, it is a business after all. And I got to thinking about that, and I got to thinking about, well, okay, so Tom and Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, easily one of the tightest bands, meaning really in sync and really on top of it, playing together, and the art was, you know, was so good. Did that get them attention? Well, okay, of course they, you know, the music videos had their place, radio play had its place, and there's a lot of moving parts here, right, to get the word out. I don't think that it's just a matter of being world class. There is marketing behind it. So this thought that I had of wondering, okay, well, if people like Tom Petty, if they're just doing it so well, they are so focused on producing great stuff that they don't have time, or they don't take the time to brag about it. Well, okay, it's possible for us to have other people who kind of sort of help us do that, or people who do that for us, which sent me down another bunny trail of wondering how people can reach How can you reach a level of performance where you are so good you stand out? And maybe that Steve Martin quote leaps to your mind. Do you remember it? Be so good they can't ignore you, right? I mean, really good quote. Be so good they can't ignore you. But you know what? There are plenty of people who are good. There are plenty of people who are very good, who go unnoticed all the time. Many years ago, I attended a five-day training, Monday through Friday, and part of that training was on selling. And the primary point of the training was what is called call reluctance. Call reluctance is the reluctance that people may have to sell. Mostly, as an art or a science, it's about the reluctance to cold call, the reluctance to make a cold call. That is to reach out to somebody that you don't know, somebody who does not know you, and attempt to get an appointment or to make a pitch. Now, I wasn't going through this training for myself. I was going through this training as a leader to try to help people that I was leading, whose job it was to do sales. But the training, I found out, was deeper than that. It was focused on how we've all got head trash that can get in our way of being as good as we might otherwise be. And there was considerable, as I remember, there was considerable time spent talking about how the real key to success is visibility. Visibility, top of mind and all that. In fact, during the training, a number of cultural examples were offered, and this is going to show you how long ago this was. They were relevant at the time. Names like Lee Iacocca. Well, Lee Iacocca was the head of Chrysler at the time, and he did TV commercials. I mean, his face was everywhere. Chrysler's advertising was dominant at the time. Iacocca had, you know, he had borrowed money from the government to try to save the business from bankruptcy and had emerged quite successfully. And the question was asked during this training, do you think Lee Iacocca is the world's best CEO? I don't think anybody in these sessions raised their hand. I know I didn't. And of course, they reinforced to us, not likely. But he is absolutely winning the visibility war because nobody's more visible as a CEO at the time. And there were other examples that they offered. I think Madonna may have been offered as, you know, is she the world's greatest dancer? Is she the world's greatest singer? Well, I don't remember anybody raising their hand. Probably not. But she certainly at the time was the most visible, and visibility, the point was, visibility is the big determining factor of success. Now, keep in mind, this training was years ago, and it happened pre-internet. And so when the internet arrived, some folks thought visibility is going to be easier. I mean, after all, Seth Godin, a long, long time ago, taught us that we are no longer living in a permission society. Because now, if you want to write, you write. You just write. You publish it online. You have your own blog. Got your own website. You could start a podcast. Who cares about being on the radio? You don't need to be on the radio. Get a microphone, plug it into your computer, and start your own podcast. I mean, gone are the days of thinking that we had to earn the right or get the permission to be on radio or to be published. It's a new day. It's a new day. Thanks, Seth, for pointing all that out. And it's completely true. The problem that we didn't see early on was that if nobody needs permission, if nobody had to earn the right, okay, well, now it's just like the Sooner land rush. Anybody can join. Anybody can give it a go, which meant the sheer volume of people clamoring for visibility, it would skyrocket. And sure enough, guess what happened? It did. It did skyrocket. Everybody's clamoring for your attention. In 1992, I had no clue about building websites. It would take me a few years of hacking around and learning and teaching myself enough HTML to manage to just, I don't know, cobble together just some ridiculously hideous website by 1994. I had no clue about this internet thing. Not really. I certainly did not see any money-making opportunity. I was running a retail company at the time, a brick-and-mortar operation with legal agreements that prohibited us from even selling mail order. Yes, there was, kids, something called mail order. We were restricted by various quote-unquote franchise agreements from selling outside our local market area. You know, I mean, never mind that our local market area was Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. Still, to think of leveraging something like the World Wide Web, well, that was, I could not compute that. I did not have the brain power to foresee what that meant. I certainly didn't see how it would improve visibility. I mean, there just didn't seem to be too much going on, quite frankly, other than email. I mean, do you remember, if you're old enough, you do, when you were as thrilled to get an email as you were as a kid to get some piece of mail in the mailbox? Do you remember that? If you're old enough, you do. Right? I mean, we opened everything. Now, I mean, how many pieces of email do you get that you never open? It's just trash, 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 trash. By the time the internet was widespread, literally it was becoming the World Wide Web, I still couldn't see it. I couldn't. I'm sorry. I couldn't see it because it seemed to me the people getting noticed early on, they were geeks. They were brainiacs. Well, I sure didn't fit into that group. More and more people were going online every day until finally the internet was reasonably commonplace in that it was in most everybody's home. Now, it didn't mean people were spending a ton of time on it. Right, we had these dial-up modems, and I think the phrase that began to be used around 1992, you know, people were beginning to surf the net. Well, let me tell you, the surf was not very good. The surf was not very big. I mean, catching a wave was an arduous, hard thing. But not everybody had an online presence, because being online then was mostly viewing. Oh, yes, there were chat rooms, there were forums. Well, okay, they didn't much count. Neither did chat. Individual people, we didn't have our own websites. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, those were not even a figment of anybody's imagination at the time. Social media was not a phrase until some executive from AOL mentioned it as a need. He said that, you know, people needed some place, social media, where they could gather and be entertained. Well, before long, Blogger and some other technology started making it easier for individuals to be online on their platform and to write to their heart's content and tell us about all the inane things of their own lives. Journaling. It was journaling, but journaling became blogging. And audio journaling, well, that would later become podcasting. And then, of course, smartphones came, and that changed it was a major, major game changer. And thanks in large part to built-in cameras and video. And so now every ninny on the planet has got a digital footprint. I mean, some of us, we're Bigfoot. Oh, well, yeah, others are more petite. There are a few odd ducks. I have some people in my life. There are a few odd ducks that are digital hermits. I mean, you can't find them anywhere. I mean, nowhere. But overall, the noise of the internet, it's deafening. It's deafening. And it's this sensory overload if you're trying to visually see something that stands out. Blow your own horn as loud as you'd like. I mean, somewhere there's a far more famous horn blower who's going to be louder. And that whole be seen everywhere, well, that works when you have the drawing power to actually be seen everywhere. Most of us like that power. It's interesting to me, especially in the realm of podcasting, you'll hear some people admonish, you know, well, you got to be here and you got to be there and you got to be this place and you got to be that place. And oh, here's this new platform, and it's a platform nobody's ever heard of. And oh, you've got to be over there. And quite frankly, most of us as podcasters do not have the popularity to even be seen at Apple, which is the, I don't know. A 900-pound gorilla sounds like a really lightweight gorilla, doesn't it? Maybe not. But if you can't be seen at Apple, and most of us can't, good luck at some of these lesser platforms. I'm not saying that you shouldn't be there. Don't get me wrong. Because, frankly, it's not that complicated. Most of us, we can just connect our RSS feed to whatever said platform is, and it's handled, right? So it's not like it's a ton of work. But blow your horn as loud as you'd like. Somebody's going to be blowing theirs louder, and the somebody who's blowing theirs louder is probably going to be more well-known than you are. I'm not saying they're better, right? That's a whole nother conversation, but it's one that it's worth having. It's worth thinking about, because that's really the genesis of the whole thing is good work. We have to introduce the notion that it doesn't work. Heavy emphasis on the word notion. People hate it when other people blow their own horn, we're told. And when we find ourselves telling people that, oh, people, I hate it when somebody blows their own horn. Well, tell that to the Kardashians. Tell that to just about every other cultural icon. Tell that to just about every best-selling author. Tell that to every highly paid keynote speaker. Tell it to every billionaire. Tell it to every popular pro athlete. Well, tell it to even non-popular pro athletes. We hate it when it works. And so I think we enjoy fooling ourselves into thinking, that doesn't work. Blowing your own horn, that doesn't work. You know what? Some of us hate the fact that it does work. I know I do. But I freely admit that that's partly because I'm really terrible at it. It feels yucky to me, but making a sale feels great to me. Reconcile that. I don't think that highly of myself. So there is that. You know, I've always figured that I needed to spend time, maybe all my time, focused on doing a good job or producing something of value. Because quite frankly, I lack the talent. I lack the brain power to do something really great and have time left over to shout about it. Which brings up a good point. Time. Specifically, how do we spend our time? You know, business-minded folks, we often lean on a lot of cliches. I get tickled at the cliches that I hear in business speak. You know, it's kind of a fascinating topic all of its own, but it's boring at the same time. Always be selling. Always be closing. Always be marketing. Always be prospecting. Always be something or other. And I got to thinking the other day, you know, I don't have that many always hours. Do you? Because, I mean, if I'm always doing one of those things, then I'm necessarily not doing anything else. So how can I do all this? But like I said, my talent, my brain power are limited. Yours may not be. I understand. I completely understand that visibility is a big deal. I am not at all disparaging or diminishing the truth that visibility may not just be a big deal. It may be the big deal, not only for making money, but just for getting noticed, for getting ahead, for being successful, defined any way that you choose to. Because, well, I mean, come on, visibility is all about being noticed. Duh. I mean, whether you're a business owner, whether you are a C-suite occupant, whether you are a cubicle dweller in your life, in your professional life, in the thing you do for money, you want other people to favorably notice you. And that's, you know, that's a topic worth coming back around to. That word favorably. You want people to favorably notice you. I also understand how everybody enjoys a good story. And our story, the story of our life, or even this particular chapter of our life, or this page of or this paragraph of our life, I realize that it's not just the one that we're writing, it's not just the one that we're living, it's also the one that we are sharing. Well, I guess we could be sharing it if we tell other people. And so it seems to me that it's about living, it's about doing, it's about performing, it's about achieving. And yes, it is also about sharing, which reminds me of that song written by John Sebastian, Stories We Could Tell. Stories We Could Tell. Jimmy Buffett, I was a big fan of Jimmy Buffett back in the early days, and on his record A1A, he recorded that song. You know what? I'm gonna insert that. I'm gonna embed that over the show notes if you wanna hear Jimmy sing John Sebastian's Stories We Could Tell. And it's a song about the stories we can tell. You know, I mean, we do it for the stories we can tell. LeaningTowardWisdom.com, by the way. That's the website. But unless we do something, we don't have any stories. Right? I mean, you can sit home all day long and do nothing. That's a boring story. By doing more and better, we have more and better stories, don't we? Makes sense to me that would be true. Don Miller wrote a book entitled A Million Miles in 1,000 Years, How I Learned to Live a Better Story. I'm going to put links to this as well in the show notes for today's episode. Just go to Leaning Toward Wisdom, Season 2021, Episode 3. You'll see a link to this. The cover's kind of unique. I'll link you up, and I'll also put a cover. But here's how the publisher describes the book, and I'm quoting. After writing a successful memoir, Donald Miller's life stalled. During what should have been the height of his success, he found himself unwilling to get out of bed, avoiding responsibility, even questioning the meaning of life. But when two movie producers proposed turning his memoir into a movie, he found himself launched into a new story filled with risk, possibility, beauty, and meaning. A Million Miles in 1,000 Years chronicles Miller's rare opportunity to edit his life into a great story, to reinvent himself so nobody shrugs their shoulders when the credits roll. Through heart-wrenching honesty and hilarious self-introspection, Don Miller takes readers through the life that emerges when it turns from boring reality into meaningful narrative. Miller goes from sleeping all day to riding his bike across America, from living in romantic daydreams to fearful encounters with love, from wasting his money to founding a nonprofit with a passionate cause. Guided by a host of outlandish but very real characters, Miller shows us how to get a second chance at life for the first time around. A Million Miles in 1,000 Years is a rare celebration of the beauty of life. I'm pretty good, right? Well, yeah. Publishers, they kind of know how to copyright. Many people, including me, found that book quite enlightening and provocative, and in all the best ways. I can highly recommend it. I do highly recommend it. Miller speaks to the doing. Now, he's a storyteller. Well, he was. Okay, he still is. But the book and this podcast, today's show, is first about our performance, our achievement, our accomplishment, what we do, and how well we do it. I can't disconnect the two. By the way, Donald Miller figured out that he could follow Michael Hyatt, and he could make a lot more money by teaching business practices than he ever could by just writing. So off to Nashville he goes, and he forms, what is it called? I think it's called Business Made Simple. It's an online learning platform, and he's been promoting this for a few years now. So from creative, kind of faith-based kind of writing, he's all about marketing and sales now. I mean, Miller has found the path to financial enlightenment. I'm happy for him. I'm not judging. Truth is, I'm rather impressed by it all. I mean, it was a major pivot that, frankly, it would have evaded most people. But after attracting the attention of a lot of readers, Miller was convinced, there's something more I can do with that attention. Namely, I can sell them something. I love capitalism at work, especially when it works well. I was listening to an interview, hearkening back to Wildflowers and Tom Petty. The daughter of Tom Petty is on that podcast that I mentioned. What I say it was, Broken Record. And she talks about Tom's fanaticism for his audience, his fanaticism for the fans. There is a celebrated legal battle that ensued between Tom and MCA, his record company at the time. And he sued them. And after a 2-year horribly embittered battle, he won. But over the 2 years, he didn't record. He didn't record, and it was all over the pricing of his albums. They had raised the price of albums, the list price of albums, by $1, and he didn't agree with it. So he took a stand. He took a really hard stand. And, he's just, his daughter talks about how he was just that music and the audience. There was just this special relationship. It'll be interesting to see as time goes by what the family does if they do things. And I certainly have no judgment at all on music that sells to be the background behind commercials and whatnot, because quite frankly, I've been exposed to some really great music because I first heard it because some big brand found this obscure thing and put it in their spots. So I'm not judging it at all, but it's going to be curious to see what happens in the future, because Tom, according to his daughter, was very fanatical, did not want that to happen. He didn't care about having the private jet and all that stuff. He didn't care about, in fact, she uses the phrase over and over, which is interesting to me, about how much money Tom left on the table. And he was pretty fanatical about wanting to leave money on the table. Most of us, you know, we'd rather not leave money on the table. I mean, if there's money to be had, you know, we'd kind of like to get it. I don't know. You start thinking about all this stuff, as I have. Clearly, you're saying to yourself right now, you're thinking about this way too much, and you're probably right. You're probably right. But I look at a Donald Miller, and here's a guy who made a pivot, had a big audience, a reasonably well-known author. Okay, maybe a little cultish following, but had plenty of attention and was able to leverage that attention. Yes, there's plenty of people that don't. I mean, doesn't a big part of you wish that you just had that in you? Yeah, me too. I learned a long time ago about myself that I have little trouble promoting or marketing or selling somebody else or something else. But when it comes to the man in the mirror, when it comes to me, okay, well, it just does not feel right, you know? It just doesn't feel right. I lean toward the belief that I'd prefer to do it, whatever it is, meaning the performance, the accomplishment, the achievement. I'd rather prefer to do that and to do it really well. Okay, granted, guy like me with practically all of my brain tied behind my back, at least as well as I'm able to, and then not fret too much about who knows about it. Now, I am not telling you that that is the recipe for success, because I know it's not. In fact, I'm telling you just the opposite. That's the recipe for failure is what that is. We need other people to know about it. We need other people to know about it if we want to have a bigger impact, if we want to have a positive influence. I do a ton of work. In fact, I would distill all of my work. All of my work can be summed up in one word, and that word is leadership. And leadership is not about power. It is not about position. It's not about being boss. Leadership is about one thing. It's about influence. And so, you know, there's this part of my brain that knows and understands this and talks about it day after day after day after day after day with clients. And then there's me. I preach a really good sermon. I'm not telling you that I do it. Let me backtrack and revisit that whole notion of being favorably noticed, since that's kind of where I'm at right now. Lots of people make daily headlines because of poor choices and poor behavior. I don't think most of us want that kind of notoriety. I do understand that some of us may subscribe to the fact, hey, any publicity is good publicity. I don't think most of us feel that way. Now, I'm supposing that there are some people that have proven to themselves that for them that works, but I don't suppose that that's you or me. I'm supposing that we mostly want people to admire us, and we want people to admire the product of our efforts. That is, whatever it is that we do, whatever it is we've created. And whether we create art or podcasts or writing or goods or services, we do need other people to notice. I've jokingly said about this podcast, without you, I'm just a guy sitting in a room by himself talking into a microphone. But I'm also not so joking when I say, at the end of the day, I'm just a guy in a room by himself talking into a microphone. Now, some of us need other people to notice us because, okay, you earn your living because you sell something. I need clients. I need clients in my professional life. I'd love to tell you that I'm gifted and I'm great at attracting and gathering clients. I'm not. And I'm not because of all the things that I've talked about. Some of us need other people to notice us because we want to educate. We want to train people. Okay, if you're a comedian, you want to make people laugh. Some of us need others to notice us because we want to be popular. Some of us need others to notice us because, well, we enjoy showing off. We need other people to notice us because we all need a degree of affirmation that what we are doing has value, that what we are doing is worthwhile. Yes. I mean, come on. I got on a rampage here a year or so ago. I ended up giving up on it. This is a story so full of irony, it's not funny. Yes, we all crave encouragement and acknowledgement. Everybody on the planet craves encouragement. I got on this crusade of, you know, a craving encouragement. Well, I abandoned it. You know why I abandoned it? Yeah. I was not encouraged to keep it up. There's a paradox. Everybody needs to know they matter. And the attention of other people seems to be a major barometer for all of us. You know, I prefer, in my high-minded, highly idealistic point of view, I prefer to think that the work will speak for itself. But I know that's not true. It's not true. I've spent too many hours watching unknown musicians play great music on YouTube or Facebook, and they're putting their music out there. And if they weren't putting their music out there, I wouldn't have any way to know about them. I wouldn't have any way to hear about them. But many of them are not making money playing their music. They've got day jobs. They got night jobs to pay the bills, and they play music because they love it. In fact, you know, a common refrain that you will hear among even successful musicians is, "I'm thankful that I can do this for a living. I'm thankful I can do this for a living." I was listening to Mike Campbell, the lead guitarist for Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, in some interview that he did, and he talked about his life looking back at, you know, 40 years with Tom and the years since Tom's been gone, and he's got this record out with his new band, the Dirty Knobs, and he's like, you know, I'm so thankful that I've been able to play music for a living. Well, there are countless other musicians who wish they could. Now, just because I notice some unknown musician on YouTube does not mean that millions of others will. I regularly watch a YouTube video by a really good musician with incredible skills, and I can look at that video, and the video, in some cases, the video only has a few hundred views. In most cases, at the highest, it might have a few thousand views. I mean, ridiculously small by any standard of popularity. And then, are you like me? And then I can get really disgusted when I can go, I don't know, I can see something pop up in some recommendation or something, and it's just some inane video of just utter nonsense. And it's got hundreds of thousands or maybe millions of views. And I'm thinking, you know, here's this poor person that's, I mean, they're playing really great music and they can't break. It's depressing, isn't it? I'll get really personal, and I will tell you that as limited as I know my natural aptitude may be, I often, true confession, I often listen to podcasts, or I will watch presentations, or I will watch speeches that get rave reviews, and I'll think, man, I got many episodes that have more value than that. Do you ever feel that way? If you're a podcaster, I guarantee you have probably felt that before. The business guy in me knows from years of experience that we have to get the word out. We have to get the word out. I know that. My Christian background knows the truth of sharing the gospel, for instance. We strive to live righteous lives and be good examples and have a good influence on others, but still we share the story of Jesus, and the gospel itself tells us the fact of our influence. I mean, Jesus himself said in Matthew chapter 5, verses 14 through 16, "You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works." Here's the kicker. "And glorify you?" No. your Father in heaven. Now, gospel means good news. Well, what do you do with good news? Well, you share it, of course. Well, even the introverts among us, like myself, we have to learn to share and to do that more effectively. Yes, I know modern culture demonstrates that the loudest horn blowers appear to be the best. And even if they aren't the best, like back in the day when the illustration was Lee Iacocca or Madonna, and now today it's somebody different. And if you're listening to this many years from now, it will be somebody different still. They appear to be the best, but okay, they're the loudest. That's who we think of. Mostly, I believe modern culture shows us the majority of people care most about the loudest hornblower, more than they care whether he or she is the best. Most popular seems to matter more than best. And while that can sometimes depress me, in fact, quite frankly, it can oftentimes depress me, I'm growing to accept it. Well, no, I'm not growing to it. I do accept it. Doesn't mean I like it. There's not much I can do about it. Except as I'm writing and telling my own story. I can more highly prize those who first focus on doing great work and not those who just focus on playing it really loud. And it's not about being a contrarian. Well, okay, maybe a little bit, but not really. It's more about respecting and appreciating people and their work, especially when it is well done. And I don't mean like a steak. You've heard this phrase before. It kind of drives me crazy. You owe it to the world to share your brilliance. Something to that effect. Yeah, we hear it all the time, right? It's a sentiment designed to help folks blow their horn more loudly. Why? Well, because you're so special. Don't you know that you are so special? The world must know about it. And now, Houston, I think I have found my problem. I don't think I'm so special. No, better said, I know I'm not so special, which is why my horn has, you know, one of those, you've seen these trumpeters. Sometimes I see it in a trombone. You know, they got those mufflers at the end of it. Mm-hmm. Well, you need more confidence, somebody might say. Okay, maybe. But what I think I may need in order to be a bigger horn player is arrogance. Yeah, that's the ticket. I need to think I'm special. In fact, I need to think that I'm so special that I just should not have any hesitation at all to blow my horn. And loudly. In fact, as loudly as I possibly can. So the conclusion is that folks who don't blow their horn loudly must lack pride or performance. I mean, after all, if they produce superior work, then it'd be worth shouting about. Or if they had confidence in their work, then, well, they wouldn't hesitate to tell everybody about it all the time. You know, maybe that's true. I don't think so, but I will freely admit to you today, I'll go on the record, I could be wrong. Maybe if I had more confidence, I could be certain. Or maybe I have little or no talent. Or maybe my performance, maybe my accomplishments, maybe my achievements are ordinary, are average. Maybe they're even subpar. I mean, you know, the odds are very, very high that I'm average. Stop laughing, because you're facing the exact same odds I'm facing, Nimnull. I don't care if you have taken your horn out of the case and you've been polishing it for days. That does not mean that you can play it. And it sure doesn't mean that it will play louder, because you know the main ingredient for playing a louder horn, air from your lungs. Let me give you a definition that I found over at writingexplained.org. The term blowhard describes people who boast about themselves too much and who often don't have the great qualities they claim to have. I mean, how much confidence do you have to excel more air? Okay. Yeah, the answer is clearly more confidence than me. Fair enough. I realize that I may not have answered the question. In fact, I didn't answer the question. Why don't the best blow their own horn the loudest? Fact is, I don't think we've even established whether it's true or not, because now, after however many minutes of recording, I may be more confused than I ever was before, and I'm still pretty clear about myself. That's about the only thing I'm real clear on. I am not a great horn blower. In fact, I'm less than competent. And maybe it's because I don't think enough about it. Maybe I don't think enough about it because knowing that it works does not change the fact that I don't think that highly of myself, that I don't think I'm that special. I don't think I'm deluded about it, but I could be. I mean, you know, I just honestly think that I'm no more special. And you can define that any way that you want to. I really don't think I'm any more special than anybody else. It seems to me that our specialness is mostly determined by the few people who benefit the most from having us in their life. And the people who benefit us the most, seems to me that they are the special people to us. You know, I follow a lot of people in social media who are accomplished, even brilliant, but they're not terribly special to my life, you know, not in the grand scheme of things. I mean, none of them have changed my life. I was thinking about all the books that I've read and still read. And while the collective and the sum total has an impact, I mean, other than Holy Scripture, I'm not going to tell you, I don't know that there's been a single book. In fact, I can rather with certainty tell you there has not been a single book that has changed my life. There has not been a single book that has really caused my life to inch in one direction or the other. The collective knowledge and the collective insights and the collective shared experience in the books, that has. But a singular book by a singular author, I'm sorry, and I'm a voracious reader, it just hasn't. Because these are not people who are there to walk with me through thick and thin. That whole inner circle thing, it seems to have quite a lot to do with it, best I can tell. And my inner circle, well, my inner circle is as small as it's ever been. And largely because some key figures have died, and largely because some other figures have, for whatever reason, we've kind of drifted apart. But, you know, so it goes. This is what happens as we get older. There currently are 9 people who comprise my most immediate family. Now, that number grows to 11 when I include my parents, who thankfully are still alive. But beyond that, they're honestly not that many more. So maybe part of the answer, at least for me personally, is that my crowd, my audience, is so small, I don't have to play loudly, right? I mean, the quality of my impact on them is not determined by how loudly I blow, but how present I am. And I realize that of all the crowds to which I am a part of, the one that matters the most is very, very, very small. So it could be that not only am I not blowing loudly because of that, I'm not listening for loud. I'm focused on benefit. I'm focused on value. I'm focused on impact. I've said to you so many times, I can't see straight, but I'll say it again. If somebody were to give me door number 1 or door number 2, behind door number 1, you can go behind that door and you're going to spend 3 hours. There's 2 rooms here, door 1, door 2, and you're going to spend 3 hours and you get to pick which door. Behind door number 1, there are 200 people. There's some really spectacular people in there. Now, there's some people that you'd know their name. Behind door number 2, there are just 6 random people. You don't even have to finish the proposition. I'm already inside door number 2. It's just how I'm wired, right? That's the introvert in me. And I like deep conversations. To go into a room of 200 people, just give me a wall to hug. I'm not going to be socially awkward, but I am not going to be comfortable. I'm going to be, all of the energy is going to be drained out of me in the first 10 minutes. And then I'm going to have 2 hours and 50 minutes to go. It's going to be miserable. Scope and scale. That seems to me to be the focus of modern culture. And from a business perspective, I get it. Bigger's better, but bigger is also less intimate. And that doesn't work for me. Now, that's my problem. I wish I had a bottom line to all this. I wish I had some real clever ending, but I rather think that this is a never-ending story. And I suspect that we would all go further if we gave ourselves more wholly to doing the very best work of our lives. And then, if some way, somehow, we could behave like little boys who run to tell mom, hey, look at me, we would rush out to the world. We would be proud to show it off without any embarrassment, without any shame. And when they watched us doing some magical feat of our very best, we would shout, hey, watch me do it again. Let me invite you to go to the website leaningtowardwisdom.com, Modern Tales of an Ancient Pursuit. Search for Season 2021, Episode 3, and you can find a few links and some show notes, and I don't know, I'll throw some illustrations. I'll embed that song by Jimmy Buffett, that John Sebastian song, The Stories We Could Tell. What stories are you writing? What stories are you telling? No, I don't mean lies. I don't mean tall tales. I've said it before and it bears repeating. This may not be a great chapter in your life right now. You may not be writing a really great paragraph, and it may not have anything to do with your ability. It might just be the circumstances of your life. I'm thinking of people that I know that are going through horrific health challenges right now. Some are going through horrific financial battles, relationship battles. We've all got our problems. It's a paragraph. It's a chapter. This is not the totality of your life. So keep writing and keep doing your very best. My name is Randy Cantrell. The website is leaningtowardwisdom.com. Thanks for being here. Greetings and welcome inside the Yellow Studio.